Maari asa, dāngā sāngā tsā, jīn shēgī dā, tika sā, jīn shēgī shī dāngā, anī, sāmbā chōgā tārdhū sē dīngā tsū dōshīn, jīn kī mwā ngō tī chē dāngā, anī cik sūp tī kē dā, tī nī kī, o dōshī nē kā sā ngō tī shū bārī. Tī sā, dāngā tsū kā sā, dāngā tsū kī bīnē sō chū bā dāngā, sō chī bī kī lē sā dāngā, mā jīn bī līn bī lē sā dāngā, tī nī, anī chī kī jīn shī bī lē sā chī kī.
Good evening. So last night we continued to have a, or good morning rather. Last night we continued to look at the 10 non-virtues. So last time we looked at the first of the 10, that of killing and of stealing. And then last night we looked at the final one of the physical non-virtues, that of sexual misconduct, and started on those of the four verbals, looking at lying and divisive speech. And so in a few moments, we'll start with the next, that of harsh speech. And the reason we are looking at this is that it is through the engaging in these non-virtuous acts that we accumulate the causes for suffering. And if the cause is accumulated completely, in other words, the various components of the basis, the attitude, the performance, and the culmination are all fully developed, or correctly developed, then one achieves a non-virtuous karmic imprint that has the strength or the potency to propel a rebirth in the lower realms. This presentation then is important to understand well so that we can use it as a motivation to engage in the opposite to the 10 non-virtues, namely the 10 virtues, which in brief is the commitment, the determined attitude not to engage in such non-virtue. And this mind of ethical restraint, where we commit to restraining ourselves within the confines of what is ethical, thereby not killing, not stealing, and so forth. This way, we create the causes for rebirth in the higher realms. So this is the purpose of this presentation. So we'll start at the bottom of page 127 with harsh speech. And as with the previous non-virtues, this one and all the others that will follow of these 10 are presented with the same four divisions so as to come to understand how one creates a complete non-virtuous karmic path. Harsh speech is something that is said, and it's words that are words that we could perhaps say are like a weapon, in that they come from a mind, the person who's doing the speaking, that is upset, and this speech has the potential to cause pain, like a weapon would. So this presentation will have the same four parts: basis, attitude, performance, and completion. So the basis for harsh speech, the basis of harsh speech is a sentient being who has become the causal basis of a hostile intent arising within you. With respect to the attitude, the discernment and mental affliction are as above, and the motivation is the wish to utter harsh speech. The performance consists in speaking unpleasantly, whether truthfully or falsely, about another person's faults associated with his lineage, body, ethics, or behavior. The completion consists in the one to whom it was said, the completion consists in the one to whom it was said, understanding the meaning. So we see there in the basis is it needs to be said to a sentient being. So if one and the words that are said come from a hostile intent, so the motivation is this wish for harm to be caused by one's speech. And here, the key point is for this non-virtuous karmic path to be accrued, the basis needs to be a person. If one is expressing harsh speech towards an inanimate object like one's computer, then that will not lead to the completion, creation of a complete non-virtuous karmic path. And with respect to the attitude, the discernment is as above. So the discernment here needs to be unmistaken. So you need to be speaking harshly to the person you intend to speak harshly towards. And the mental affliction is, as with all the others, it's any of the three poisons, namely that of confused ignorance, or attachment, or anger. And the motivation is the wish to utter or to speak harshly. In terms of the performance, so this is similar to what we've seen with previous verbal non-virtues. It doesn't make a difference whether one speaks truthfully or falsely.
And bajik cikzubu chiye xio rwa da, ndi rwa da, midin bala na, du jeme na, kyo di pe jeduwa sin cikzubu dun kyo ju jeda chak rwa, den bidin se de.
So an illustration of being truthfully or falsely would be, if you're upset and you're speaking harshly towards someone about something they have done, they may well actually have done that. So therefore you are speaking truthfully, but it is in this harsh manner. And falsely would be where they actually have not done this, you know this, but you are still speaking to them, taking out your bad mood on them, even though you know they have not done so.
And then you get on that rig some see the day how Jimmy Gasa Delia, Shigi Tony, Gunja Jay or Kitty Rick Mirik Satura Kirin Mirik did Peducher as a dene, rig some, rig you gonna Gunja Jay, Susu Shia Dilla, rig you gonna, and the Koy Rick Kitty Rick did Peducher as a denation, and a tick, Tisum Shia, Lusums and the Lugi Tony, and the Kirlu Bet.
In terms of what one can speak harshly about, then several points are given. The first being lineage. So the way to understand this word translated as lineage is in a broader way to bring it into our modern context. So this could be about race, it could be about nationality, it could be about one's family, it could be about a group that one associates with. So this could be, again, nationality and so forth. So lineage then taken in a broader sense, like ancestry, but also in terms of whom one is associating with. So it could be a particular group. So this is speaking harshly about that or about one's body. So this is clear, one's physical appearance, saying you smell, you're fat, whatever it may be. And then in terms of ethics, criticizing the person's ethical behavior, not keeping your vows well, and so forth. And again, this can be truthful or not, but one is speaking harshly. And then the final one is that of behavior. So this again, just their various conduct, perhaps how they speak, how they write, whatever it may be, speaking harshly about them. So then there's this wide number of ways. And again, with the completion, as earlier we see, the completion consists in the one to whom it was said, understanding the meaning. They merely have to understand what has been said. They don't need to be upset by these harsh words. They merely need to understand them. So the creation of the karmic imprint is the intention to speak harshly. So that mental factor, that consciousness of intention to speak harshly, that is the creation of the karmic imprint.
That is the lady, lady, lam, yon, so, 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 Kulung Sangore, and then Dushe Sangore, and then She Segishi, Nasim Kiwi, She the Sangore, and the and Joa, Joa Sangore, and Tartu Sangor Chasadida, or Sangor was Shiroshi.
But for the karmic path, the non-virtuous karmic path of harsh speech to be created, then intention is insufficient. This also requires the basis, the attitude, the performance, and the completion. And as we saw in the basis, harsh speech, for it to be a karmic path, needs to be expressed towards a person, not towards an inanimate object. And also the discernment needs to be unmistaken. So if you are expressing your anger or whatever at the person, if you're speaking harshly to a person, but you think you're talking to someone else, then that would be an illustration of a mistaken discernment, whereas it needs to be unmistaken. You need to be speaking harshly to the person that you intend to speak harshly to. The mental affliction needs to be one of the three, the ignorance of confusion, anger or attachment. So it is possible that, for example, a parent speaks harshly to their child so as to get them to correct their behavior. But the parent's mind is not one of anger, so this harsh speech is not motivated by anger, but rather by wanting the child to grow up well, to stop doing something that's harmful, but to grow up well. So then the parents may speak to them sternly. So they may well use harsh speech, but they are not motivated by an affliction, or their motivation is separate from one of these afflictions. Rather, they are wanting to benefit the child. So for one to accrue a complete non-virtuous karmic path, all four parts are required that are basis, attitude, performance, and completion. And they need to be accrued completely. Then, if one does so, one has created a karmic, a non-virtuous karmic imprint, which has the potency or the potential to propel a rebirth in the lower realms. If any of these are absent, one will not have accrued a complete karmic path, but most possibly a non-virtuous karmic imprint, but not a karmic path. So therefore, it would not lead to rebirth in the lower realms, but to a suffering experience. Then, the opposite of harsh speech is the virtuous action of committing not to engage in harsh speech. So this can be as simple as developing the determination, I will not speak harshly. But for that to have a meaningful impact, merely developing that determination is insufficient. It needs to be come about independence on reasoning. So when hearing teachings like these on the 10 non-virtues, with each non-virtue, the wish should arise, I will not do this, and make the commitment, I will not engage in this particular non-virtue, in this case, harsh speech. And in this way, one creates the virtuous karmic imprint of committing to not engaging in it. But if one does so based on reasons, that determination is going to be much stronger. The reasons then, in general also, again, using this as an illustration, if I'm speaking harshly, I'm coming from a basis, I'm coming from a mind that has a hostile intent. So I clearly am suffering if I'm speaking harshly. Moreover, the person, the recipient, the one who's on the receiving end of my harsh speech, they are most probably going to be hurt by what I have to say. I don't want to suffer, and I don't want to cause suffering for others. My life is hard enough. I don't need to add to my problems. And others too, their lives are difficult. I don't need to add to their problems. And then, moreover, not only for the suffering that I and others will experience now, through this accumulation of non-virtuous karma, I create the causes to suffer in future lives as well. Therefore, I commit to not expressing myself in this way. In this way, thinking in this way based on reasons, then one's ethical imprint that one creates is far stronger, and it will have a lasting impact on one's behavior. The way to do a meditation such as this, and I'll use harsh speech as an illustration, but you apply it elsewhere, is you recognize that, especially if you have a habituation, to change this habituation requires repeated effort. A mere wish arising perhaps now is insufficient. One needs to generate this determination repeatedly. Moreover, that determination needs to be based on reasoning. And then thirdly, one needs to engage in the in one's meditation. One needs to use actual examples from your life. So role play. Take times when you have responded with harsh speech and see how you could have responded more skillfully. And here, with this commitment not to respond with harsh speech, through recognizing the faults for yourself and others in this life and lives to come, take an illustration where you have spoken harshly. Think, how could I rather have spoken better? What would have been an appropriate way? And there you can come up with, rely on your further Dharma education, valuing the other person, recognizing perhaps they made an error rather than they meant to do this, and so forth. And then also there will be, so this is important, in this way, You learn how to respond more skillfully, not to respond in a harsh manner. Moreover, when you recall past events, there will be times when you say, but hang on, what that person was doing was wrong and they needed to be stopped. So there, draw on what I said a few moments ago, that one can speak perhaps firmly, but ensure that one's mind is genuinely free of anger. And is genuinely motivated by the wish to benefit the other person, perhaps benefit them by stopping them to cause harm. So then you can role play. How could I have responded more skillfully? Still perhaps spoken firmly, but with a mind that's calm and relaxed. And then finally, you recognize that by meditating this way, cultivating this habituation, I'm creating the causes to reduce the negativity that I create, and also to rather accumulate virtue. Because I have this determination not to engage in harsh speech, and I'm training my mind not to do so, I'm creating virtue. And then, moreover, I am also in this reflection thinking of ways that I can be of benefit to others, others who are making mistakes, and where I have the relationship with them, where they will be receptive, where our relationship is such that it is appropriate for me to speak to them in a firm manner, I am benefiting them. And then take illustrations both from your life, and you can also think of some that are theoretical. Perhaps you're going to a restaurant, and then you think, what if the food that I get is contrary to what I ordered? I order for something specific, and they give it me something wrong. How can I respond skillfully? Not get upset because I don't like the food or it's contrary to my allergies or whatever it may be. How can I respond skillfully? And you prepare yourself then also for upcoming events. And in this way, your mental transformation will come about much more quickly, especially if the meditation is done like this, repeatedly over a sustained period.
在了嘛说在根部里面穷举把把那你给眼睛呢等你没没穷举嘛把这现在加上自己还穷过了哦你那些嗯这个这个穷举起这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这个这 ね、ニョモンゴクネマラン社会で基地ボルチャチェゴディザ、ネネギタで通信やけ、ゲンディネ用語レセチ、ま、社員で、どんな人ボデルだ、テネギトネネチ、え、通信やで、ば、え、送語レセチ、ここ、ろだ。
When you reflect on times when you have spoken harshly, look for whether the complete karmic path was created, and within that, you're looking for what affliction was present. Sometimes there may be confused ignorance, such as thinking that one's expression in this manner is justified. Other times there may be attachment, or it may probably often be that of anger. Whichever it may be, the result is likely to be that your unhappy mind is now not only being expressed, but it's having a negative impact on the recipient, on the person you are expressing your unhappiness towards. And in this way, your own negativity, your own unhappiness is shared broadly. Rather than dealing with your own mind skillfully, rather you're taking out your unhappiness, your afflictions on others. And in this way, we make the lives of others that much harder. And so depending on the general meditations you do, particularly if you are doing meditations such as on love, this is not the kind of impact we want to have on others. We want them to be happy. And here, what are we doing? By not being skillful with our mind, we are bringing unhappiness into the lives of others. And this isn't something that we do without repercussions. So even setting aside the karmic repercussions, which we aren't always so visible, we know the impact it has on relationships. Whatever the dynamic may be, whether it is with a friend, with a family member, or in a working environment, or just someone in society, speaking in unkind ways has an impact on our relationships with others. And if we have the aspiration to become a bodhisattva, to have a transformative impact on others in this and lives to come, by speaking harshly to others, we harm our connection with them and make it more difficult that in the future our words will have a meaningful impact, a beneficial impact on them. And here's motivation. Call to mind your own experiences as well as what you've observed, where harsh speech damages relationships, that friendships may be lost, family members may want nothing to do with each other, and that you may well have friends who talk about a former friend or relative through the lens of how they remember them, which is perhaps that final fight. And in this way, we can recognize how a relationship that may have started off very well, or perhaps a romantic relationship started very well, and you had years of good interactions, but what is remembered is all the aggressive interactions, the harsh speech. And in this way, the good of that relationship is forgotten. And the connection we had with someone is not only broken, but we remember them, or we are remembered in this exaggerated way, with just the harsh speech being remembered. So this we can liken to if someone's camping and not caring for their fire properly, that just a single spark from a fire that is not watched can lead to a huge bushfire. So too, with, in particular with anger, in this context, harsh speech, a great karmic result can follow from something that we may want to just dismiss or forget about or apologize and think it's gone. So we need to guard our mind to ensure we don't speak in these ways. And moreover, in your reflection, remind yourself that perhaps with some people, you have a reputation for harsh speech and see the impact that that has on your relationship with them. Or in your meditation, reflect, what would it be like if I were to have such a reputation? How would people respond to me? How would such a person respond to me? Just seeing me or hearing my voice, fear would arise within them. And how likely, and how much more likely then would confrontations be when I meet them because of this reputation I've earned? So in this and the other ways I've mentioned, we strengthen our determination. I will take care of my mind. I will not express myself in this way. Moreover, not only in terms of ethics, committing to not engaging in harsh speech, one's wish to develop a genuine loving attitude towards others so that whomever we meet, our heart will open, a tenderness, a gentleness towards them will spontaneously arise. That is the reaction that a person has cultivated genuine love in them has for whomever they meet. And thereby, one can imagine how transformed one's relationships with others are. So this then is how to meditate in a more expansive manner on just a single of the 10 non-virtues.
And
in this meditation, again, I want to encourage you, recall your own lived experience, particularly what you yourself think, situations you yourself have been in, as well as what you have observed in the world that you know through your friends or you see perhaps through media, to recognize the consequences of harsh speech. This is important because it most commonly will come from ignorance or anger, and to recognize that harsh speech is never justified and that it causes harm. You think of situations perhaps from your own lived experience or other, certainly you'll know of where harsh speech has had such an impact that a couple gets together, they have this process of falling in love, becoming ever closer, developing a close bond, deep trust with each other. But then, perhaps from the very first time that harsh speech is uttered, immediately defenses go up, some separation is there. Relationship is likely to continue, but if this now starts to be a frequent event, that relationship will be harmed. And in the end, the closeness, the tenderness may be entirely lost. The relationship may continue, particularly perhaps if it's in a work situation or even if it's in a marriage. The relationship may continue, but the angry person will just be put up with. There will not be trust. There will not be tenderness. This will be gone. This is a great loss. And this loss comes from the person who speaks harshly, not being skilled with their own mind. So we must ensure that we are not that person, not now or not in lives to come. And to do this, we need to take care of our minds consistently, using, as we've been hearing in the Shantideva's teachings, in engaging in a bodhisattva's way of life, vigilance and mindfulness. And when we notice an affliction arising, not to respond. So we may well get upset about something. We may feel self-righteous and we feel that we should say something. But if our vigilance is well-trained, we'll recognize this. And if our mindfulness is also well-trained, we'll recognize that affliction as an affliction and see it's not justified. And then, as Shantideva describes, be like a log. Do not respond. Rather, stay silent and deal with your mind. Calm your mind. Make your mind loving and kind and wise again. And then respond, but not with an afflicted mind. The final of the four verbal non-virtues is that of idle talk, or a clearer translation would be speech of no great purpose or speech of no great meaning. So this is where one talks about things that one may well find interesting, but they really have no great purpose, or this conversation has no about them has no great purpose or meaning. So one could be talking about events in the world, stories of war and conflict, or just a story in general. And this is something that really has no great purpose or meaning. So the presentation, as with the others, has the four components of basis, attitude, performance, and completion.
So
the basis of idle talk is a meaningless topic, and the among the three aspects belonging to the attitude, the discernment is stated merely as discerning that as that. Continuing, in this context, it is to accurately discern the topic one wants to talk about and then talk about it. There is no need for someone to understand it.
Jesus,
This term translated as discernment throughout the section is often translated as perception or conception, give a clear understanding of it. So here we see in the second line, discernment is stated merely as discerning this as that. So in other words, where one is wanting to talk about something, so discerning that as that. So one is wanting to talk about something and then talking about that rather than something else. So one discerns or perceives that this is the object I want to talk about, and then one does so. So we see here, there is no need for someone to understand it. So this makes idle talk stand out from the other verbal non-virtues. So the others need to be understood. But here, someone doesn't need to understand. You could be mumbling, but moreover, you could speak in a language that they don't understand. But moreover, you don't need to talk to someone else. We see there in the basis. The basis of idle talk is a meaningless topic. One can be in one's room talking away to oneself, and this would still be an illustration, or could still be an illustration of idle talk. So one does not need to talk to a person. One can be talking to an inanimate object or to oneself. And if one is talking to another person, they do not need to understand it. So therefore, you could be alone, rambling away about the faults of others or how life is so unfair, and this would be an illustration of idle talk, whilst you are only talking to yourself. There's no one else around you, or there's no one understanding you. The mental affliction is any of the three poisons, that of confused ignorance or attachment or anger. And just to say again, confused ignorance means not understanding, not understanding. So it's not understanding this topic, not understanding what is idle talk. And the motivation is the desire to express whatever random thoughts occur. And the performance consists in starting to utter idle talk. And the completion is to finish uttering idle talk.
That is,
So that when, if one is wanting to say, when is the karmic imprint in this process of idle talk accumulated? So it is this the intention, so the mental factor of intention, to which would be motivated or conjoined with an affliction of confused ignorance, attachment or anger. And to talk about some random topic, discerning this, that as that, and about some random topic. So it's when one has that intention, then the karma of idle talk, or the karmic imprint of idle talk, is accrued. Amongst the non-virtues, some for each individual be more common and others less common. I imagine for most of you that of killing is not so common. But this idle talk, speech of no great purpose or meaning, this is probably quite common, in that so much of our mental activity, which is then expressed verbally, is just this expression about topics of no great purpose or meaning. And in this way, motivated by the afflictions, one engages in conversation with oneself or others that serves no real positive purpose. So imagine when watching a film or talking about the plot of a film, then one's talking about the various characters, what they're up to, and you have your hopes expressed, you express your hopes about the character you like, that things go well, and the character who's the villain in the film, that things don't go as they wish. And this, then one's talking possibly motivated by attachment, and then in this way, one is engaging in extensive idle talk. So too, when watching sport, and you're hoping that your team does well, and that they do a whole lot better than they have been doing, or that they continue on their winning streak, and you're talking about what's going on, probably again motivated by attachment, but who knows, maybe anger. And here too, one is talking about it perhaps quite extensively about something of no great purpose, or about news, or about the circumstances in a common friend's life, and what they're getting up to, the work they're doing, what's going on in their family life, etc. And in this way, one easily can consume a lot of time talking about things of no great purpose.
All those And so, Suki, Jig, Benyamin Changina, Tangan Suki, Kawasaya, and the Barchia reduced to Trollard, the main big, the Naka, Kishi, the Nishi, Digi, Kinchine, and it died a six of mini parts of Kishi, and the six of the Denegilia, the Dine, Pacondo, and the Trupe Jazz, Jada, the Nayungor, Jazana, Meba, the Naka Kishina, and Shigio Mares, Tondala, Kanjilanga, the Kishi Kareshevina. Then,
looking at this affliction of this non-virtue of idle talk, look clearly and see just how much time is consumed in this way. Because it is quite startling how much of one's speech and interactions are consumed about topics of no real purpose, no real meaning. And that when one is doing so, one is almost certainly doing so influenced by an affliction of ignorance, attachment, or anger. So therefore, engaging in speech like this, one's habituation to the afflictions will be stronger, because one is likely to be talking about something that stimulates you. And this could well be either a mind of anger or a mind of attachment, strengthening your habituation to going through life afflicted, with a mind that is afflicted. And as someone who has an aspiration to develop the mind of the Dharma within, in particular to develop paths such as become a bodhisattva, to develop calm abiding, whatever it may be, one's mind needs to rather be on such topics. And therefore, if one is generally striving to cultivate the mind of the Dharma within, why on earth would one spend time talking and thinking about things that have no real meaning and in fact serve as an obstacle to one's spiritual development? And the harm that can come from idle talk is, on one hand, the strengthening of one's habituation to the afflictions, remaining very familiar to going through one's day with the mind afflicted, and also, depending on what one's talking about and to whom, conflict may well follow. But not only conflict, the other grave danger is that a liking to talk about these topics continues to grow. And that just means one will do so ever more. And you'll have those friends that you turn to discuss the latest events. And in this way, your life gets consumed. It's an important aspect of thinking about these non-virtues and rather generating the opposite mind, the virtuous mind, is that one becomes less talkative and perhaps a better, more intuitive listener. And rather in having one's responses guided by the Dharma that you are cultivating within, and rather engaging with the topics of the Dharma.
And on that's if you share the Dharma, share it, Pembe, some bit on air, and the chick tick, and minibi, some bit on air, and the chick tick tick pa, zoom your bite, and jabut on a kisha or escura, the naked up, the night may be kissy, the naked magic, the make kissy mongushi, open a dee kinchen, so sugar to the trolla to add a dee kinchen, and the magic tissu turn, the naked meeting by child, the naked yanga monguyo and za, just not a tissu dang, archa, the kin, the naked yungdo as a bit, kin, you take a dash, the naked other. ကံကတဲ့နေကြီးကျွန်းတဲ့ဆမ်တာဒီနေ့ကျွန်းတဲ့ဆမ်တာလည်းသဒ္ဒါတိချင်းတိကမင်းတိဆောင်ရည်ဒီနေ့ချက်စုရှိမဲဆံပေဆမ်တာလားငါကျဲကြီးကျွန်းတဲ့ရှိမဲဆံပေဆမ်တာကိုလည်းဆက်သဒ္ဒါဒီဆမ်တာပဲနဲ့ဒါချက်စုပေကေဆုံးပေကေကေပါဒီနေ့ငါချက်ဆုံးပေကေပါချာလို့ရဲချေတယ်ငါချက်ဆုံးပေကေပါပေါင်းပေကေငါချက်ဆုံးပေဆုရင်ဆုံးပါဆုရင်ဆုံးပါတော့ငါချက်ဆုံးပါချက်စုဆုံးပါ
So in the reflections on these non-virtues, and the two we've looked at thus far this morning, harsh speech and idle speech, but it's similar for all of them. Need to look at the faults and look clearly at the faults, not just from a theoretical point of view, but the impact that, in this instance, harsh speech and idle speech has on your life. Need to be personal. What are the impacts this has on me? And you need to think about it broadly using real examples of your own lived experience where either you have partaken in harsh or idle speech or been on the recipient of such, as well as what you've observed. And recognize the harm that it does. Harsh speech is particularly easy to see that it's harmful, but there one needs to challenge the affliction of ignorance that justifies harsh speech. Recognizing that harsh speech causes harm, harms our relationships with others. It pushes us further from others, makes it much more difficult for either now or in future lives to be of benefit to others. We have the aspiration to become a bodhisattva, to have connections with others which are damaged by harsh speech will not aid our interactions with them in lives to come. And in terms of idle speech, we need to gain vivid clarity of how much time this consumes, and time in terms of the conversation, time in terms of the mental energy, and our strong habituation we have to this, how easily it is expressed, and therefore how much time it consumes. And then we can recognize that these 10 non-virtues, in these instances, harmful speech and idle speech, are obstacles to our Dharma practice. So we are not only accumulating non-virtue that will lead to suffering in lives to come. We are not only experiencing the suffering right now due to the presence of the afflictions. We are not only having a negative impact in our interactions with others, but it is these non-virtues serve as obstacles to the cultivation of the minds of the Dharma within. They impede our development of our Dharma goals within. Moreover, if we think of the kind of person we want to be, someone who generates genuine love and compassion, someone who generates bodhicitta, we think then of the kind of relationships we want to have with others. These will be relationships of meaning, relationships where we bring benefit to others. In such relationships, there is no space for harsh speech. There is no space for idle speech. So these need to be abandoned. They are not in accordance with the kind of person we want to be. Thinking in this way then, we develop this commitment, this determination. I will restrain myself from engaging in harsh speech, in idle speech, and so forth. So this applies to all of these. I will restrain myself from doing so based on these reasonings. So here, one is now not only refraining from non-virtue, but one is cultivating virtue. This is the ethical restraint one is restraining oneself ethically from harsh speech. One is restraining oneself ethically from idle speech. So this then is the cultivation of virtue, and we are creating a barrier in our mind from accumulating this non-virtue. So this is the way to meditate on these non-virtues. Now we come to the first of the mental non-virtues, that of covetousness. So covetousness is in one covets the wealth or property of someone else's. And the presentation has the same four divisions, basis, attitude, performance, and completion. The basis of covetousness is the wealth or property of someone else. And then in terms of attitude, among the three aspects belonging to the attitude, the discernment consists in an accurate discernment of their basis. In other words, that wealth that one covets that is of, belongs to someone else. And the mental affliction is any of the three poisons, confused ignorance, ignorance or confusion, anger or attachment. The motivation is the desire to make it one's own. So this desire is to get it, to have it, or to want it to be one's own. Being a mental non-virtue, this is all happening, including now the performance on a mental level. So the performance consists in striving for the object of that thought. So you've given rise to a wish to make it your own, someone else's property or wealth. And now this way of thinking is progressing forward in the sense of you're striving to think, how can I get that? Then the stream of this covetous thought concludes or completes with the thought, may this wealth and so forth be mine. So one goes from the wish for to have something of someone else's, then the calculation of how one will go attain that, and then the determination, the conclusion, that will become mine. So in this sequence, the karmic imprint is accumulated in that motivation where the intent arises as the wish to make what one has discerned as someone else's wealth or property one's own. So that mental factor of intention is the creation of the karmic imprint. For it to be a karmic path, then one will think a little further about how one will gain so, and then one determines, comes to the decision, I will make it my own. And then one has completed the action and a karmic path is created. So this is just this mental process. There's nothing about you actually have to acquire it, but you have gone through this mental process completely. Now to harmful intent. So we see here there's a close relationship with that of harsh speech. The basis, the discernment, and the mental affliction of harmful intent are the same as with harsh speech. So the basis for harmful intent, so I'm just reading from harsh speech, is a sentient being who has become the causal basis of a hostile intent arising within you. The what came next? The discernment needs to be unmistaken, and the mental affliction is any of the three poisons, that are the ignorance of confusion or anger or attachment. So any of the three poisons. So that's the same as with harsh speech. Then the motivation, and I'm just going to change the translation a little. The motivation is the desire for someone to be hit and the like. Reading a little further, the motivation is the desire for someone to be hit and the like. So, and the like refers to the means by which harm comes to the person. That can be expressed in any way, but it comes with this motivation of wanting someone to receive harm. The text continues. It is the thought, how nice it would be if this person were to be killed or imprisoned, or if his wealth were ruined by itself. So that could be translated as naturally, for the wealth to naturally be ruined, so they lose their wealth, or by someone else and the like. So we see here in the motivation that it is very broad. One is wanting harm to come to someone else. And that harm can be to their person, it can be to their possessions, it can be caused naturally, it can be caused by oneself or someone else. So the key point I want to be clear in the motivation here is that it can be expressed in many ways. The pivotal part is that you wanting harm to come to someone else. That harm can come to them physically, verbally, or mentally, and it can be done by yourself or someone else, or by external circumstances. So, for example, they lose all their wealth, or you can want them to be imprisoned. So, in these various ways, or in a wide variety of ways, one is wanting harm to come to someone else. The performance consists in actually engaging in this thought. With all three mental non-virtues, the performance is mental. So in this case, the performance consists in actually engaging in this thought. And this is most likely to be experienced not as a single thought, but of several thoughts, or perhaps again and again and again, thinking, having this wish for harm to come to someone. The completion consists in the resolve to hit and the like. So here one comes to the completion, one comes to the culmination of the wish for harm to come to that person.
Then
And the final one is that of wrong views. So we see the basis of wrong views is an object that actually exists. Then among reading from the text, among the three aspects belonging to the attitude, the discernment consists in considering the denial of the object to be true. The mental affliction is any of the three poisons, and the motivation consists in wanting to deny that thing. And the three poisons again are either that the ignorance of confusion or attachment or anger. And the motivation is the, merely because this again is a mental non-virtue. So the motivation is wanting to deny that thing that exists. So when we look at the performances in this paragraph, it is only the first line. The rest gives illustrations. So the performance is just this. Like with the other mental non-virtues, it's thinking about it much more, thinking about it again and again. The performance consists in beginning to engage in such thinking. To take as an illustration, someone who doesn't believe in cause and effect, in karma. So such a person will have a discernment that something that actually exists, that the law of cause and effect, that such a thing, it does not exist. So they are, just reading from the book, they discern that considers denying an object to be true. So something that does exist, so they're talking about an existence. And that is what they are wanting to deny. And that wanting to deny is the very motivation to do so. And the performance is just then thinking about why, in this instance, cause and effect, why there is no such thing as cause and effect. So the discernment is discerning something that does, in effect, in reality exist, cause and effect. The motivation is this wanting to deny it. And then the thought process that follows is the performance of denying something that does exist, cause and effect. So now performance is presented in two parts. The first part was that first sentence, the actual performance, and then comes illustrations. This has four points. The first is denying causes, which consists in the view there is no good conduct and bad conduct. So good conduct means virtuous karma, bad conduct means non-virtuous karma. So we see that this is 4 points. The first is denying causes, virtuous and non-virtuous. And then the second is denying effects, which consists in the view there are no fully ripened effects of those two. So there aren't fully ripened effects that follow from non-virtuous causes, and no fully ripened results that follow from virtuous causes. So this is the second denying effect.
And
And then the third is that of denying activities. So from here then, the English is not quite in the same order. We're just going to skip a bit, which in the Tibetan comes much later. The translation's fine, just the order is a bit different. So denying activities, and then we go a couple lines down to the meaning of it. The third, denying activities, is three aspects. Denying the activity of planting and holding the seed, denying the activity of planting and holding the seed, which consists in the view. There is no planting of a seed by the father, no holding of a seed by the mother. This wrong view is held by someone who does not accept cause and effect, and therefore does not accept past and future lives either. Rather, they are likely to hold a view that, so the word is person, but maybe we would say soul. The person is made by God, by a creator God, and is therefore permanent. It does not change, and it is not subject to momentary change. So this is a wrong illustration of a wrong view. So they do not accept cause and effect. They do not accept that a person goes from past lives to present lives and on to future lives. Rather, they hold that the person is made by God, creator God, and therefore permanent.
Is that the Gansa Tabare, you don't get your marriage in the year, and then I'm going to put Amy Kido as you do, that Bugu Subudi, pay seven, may seven, so stop, and then maybe Lulva, Zinjima, Subudva, Kiarimoto, the Gansadi, Subudan Kasa, Kapumbo, and Kasa Kagare, Jesan, Gansadi, Nitine, Tabare Madu, you don't get it in Kiwamare, Koy Pumbo, the Mitabare, you don't get it in Kiwamare, said the Okondu, the Sungore. 这个人叫我的那么的 이상한지
Those who hold this view, they accept normal procreation, that parents sleep together, the mother gets pregnant, and the child is born from her body. So there's no confusion about the process of pregnancy and birth. And there's also no confusion about the body now of this child, of this infant, as being impermanent. There's no confusion there. But they clearly, they say that that body is not the person, and the person is permanent. The person doesn't change. So again, I think in our culture we'd say soul, but there's no word for soul, so it's person. So that person is created by the Creator, and that is unchanging. The body of now the infant, so it was conceived in the way that everyone agrees, and that body too is impermanent, but the person, that is unchanging.
Jawala, Jawala, Kua, Jebani, Chitingaman, and Dirunga, the Dinishimotua, Medo, Sheba, Wars, Jesada, and the Kiwangaman, Shine, Tedelunga said, Yomares, Yomaras, the Kiwangaji, Gansa, the Tawares, Kilimbaza, Gansa, the Kudan Kilimadu, Badini, the Kiwangaji, Kimilan, the Kiwangaman, that the Tedel Kiwalimbas, the Unga, Yomares, Chitingaman, Dirunga.
So where we are is we see that this has four parts, this wrong view has four parts, and we're in the third, and the third has its own three parts. We've looked at the first, now coming to the second. Denying the activities of coming and going, which consist in the view, there is no coming from a former existence to this one, and no going from this one to a future one. So this, it makes sense, they believe in this because they do not accept reincarnation. And if they don't accept reincarnation, they do not accept that a person has come from a past life to this life, nor that when death comes, the person will go from this life to the next life.
And then, Jewel, you, Jewel, Gua, Tibani, and this yesterday, Simjin, Zuki, or Medo, Zuki, Yomares, Zuki said, Yomares, all that killing Yomarade.
And the final part here, and denying the activity of being born, which consists in the view, and I'll just change a word, there's no intermediate state into which sentient beings are spontaneously born.
Now, she, you be, mobo, la, kuwa, de bani, trachumba, me, se, trachumba, trachumba, tike, yomar, trachumba, se, yomar, se, da, sangi, yomar, se, da, kunjo, kasuri, denigi, se, tike, da, nu, ne, kuwa, de bani, you be, mobo, la, kuwa, de bas. Janjusimba, the trachumba, se, da, dinner, as trachumba, me, trachumba, so, let the trachumba, da, sangi, la, so, me, se, dinero.
So that then is the third. Now coming to the fourth one. So in English, we're going back up. Where are we? denying existing phenomena which consist in the view, arhats and the like, so including Buddhas, do not exist. So in the performance was that one sentence, and then the rest of it was giving 4 points. And now completion two is also only one sentence, and then it's like a separate sub-outline. So what is the completion of wrong view? It is to be certain of one's denial. So we saw earlier in the presentation that wrong views come about independent on any of the three root poisons. Wrong views requires some degree of thought to come to this point. So when we think of the three poisons from which the wrong view is associated with, attachment is quite likely in that one could be attached to a wrong view, or one could be ignorantly believe in something that is not actually true. So these two would be likely to, one has come to understand a philosophy, the philosophical tenet, one has had teachings, one has thought about the teachings, and as one has come to the wrong view. That, as I've described it there, would be an expression of confused ignorance, because one's wrong view is based on an incorrect understanding. But if one is attached to that view, then one's wrong view comes from attachment. And then the way anger can play its role is if one is angry towards someone, it says, oh, well, your beliefs are foolish, and there's no such thing as past lives, there's no such thing as cause and effect, and so forth, then this is where the affliction of anger is involved in the attention, or in the attitude, rather.
Tarpada, Tamje Kembada, Lake, and Yeside, Keda, Mever, Yomaris, Lota Kevaina, and Digi Kinchine, and then I'll give you Chawa Yamneside, Chick Mambuji, Garu, which is a Denisa, and the Chick Kawakine, Satu Maris, and Denisa, Lota Digi, and Kigio Marisa Sungur, which is a day, Lota Magi, and the Susuki, Tak, Lota Magi, Tablam de Garrison, Susuki, Shinju, Jeba Che, Yuji, Neva Timinia, Neva Nedi.
So summarize then wrong views. If someone has a wrong view, these can serve as a great impediment to the accumulation of virtue. Because if one doesn't believe in cause and effect, this one then may well end up at a hedonistic point, thinking that what one does really has no consequence. And so therefore, the wrong views can serve as an impediment to the cultivation of virtue. And this shows to the need to cultivate one's intelligence or wisdom, to develop knowledge and to investigate one's own mind and ensure one is not influenced by wrong views.
Where
yourself or those that you talk to have doubts about the views of the Dharma, that in itself is not necessarily a wrong view. So here one needs to deal with this situation skillfully, because the mistake will be to come to a wrong conclusion. But if one rather entertains a possibility, then one's mind stays open and doesn't come to a firm conclusion that just because I cannot establish past and future lives or cause and effect, therefore they cannot exist. This would be then coming to a wrong view. But if one rather says, I cannot establish it, I don't see how it's possible, that's okay. Maybe in time I will, maybe in time I won't. And you keep your mind open. Then you gather more information and you continue to investigate, to think for yourself. This is the skillful way to deal with doubts that one has about the Dharma in general. Because there are things that are culturally different for us, and that are culturally different, and things that we may find a bit challenging to accept. So then, that's fine. Just keep your mind open, and don't come to any firm conclusion. Then we can conclude there for this morning. But if you have questions on the Ten on Virtues or anything else, then feel free to ask. The Prenable Sepal?
I just have a, in this wrong view, where it's saying there's a wrong view denying the activity of planting and watering the seed. The statement there's no planting the seed by the father and watering the seed by mother. The implication seems to be that the opposite is true. Mm. It seems almost like it's saying, you know, the father now creates the baby and, you know, it's sort of gestated in the womb or something.
Maybe the
that's a denial of, you know, the creation of the physical form for embodiment.
Pei seven deva dang, may seven zin che, and the pu ge mi gansa de yo ma re se. Gansa de ni ge wa yo ma re se, zin ba se de, pei seven deva yo ma re, may zin ba yo ma re se de, gari zin se de, pu mi ge ge, pu ge ge pei seven deva yo ma re se wo re. Da gari zin ba me se ne, seven deva ne, dro na le ya pu di ya, so kyong che ge may zin ba se de yo ma re se wo re, ma do.
Di gansa ma re.
di sukruwa di nale gansa chura su dina gansa kharwa ma su di nga to marwa ma su gansa su le lo su chura dina shin ga de gansa se su di le lo su gansa sha gurwa che zan de gar su ne gansa se di pei ba ma su gar su de ba bi gi ane ma chi bu sa ban tap de ne ma le de bu di ge ma le de ki go si go wa si dan kon ju gi di ke ling go ma re che Sesan pergi pergi sabun tayar yor yor macam, buku sabun tayar yor macam sabun cipah tayar yor es. Ina buku cegi sabun tap dini, ane jauh nala buku cahce, buku cer cer cahce, kira yor macam dini yor macam es itu gol.
Buku cer
cer cahce macam dua gol lah, dini yor macam yor macam es ni. Jangan tu suh dia kan, saya buku suh buku dia kan, minyak dia cipah sampai, dia dah yang kau tu tenggelam macam. Jadi suh buku dia, dia dia pay sabun tap, dia ni mayu jauh nak leh cer 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 suh dia yau leh. Tapi suh buku dia nak juga kan, sah sah tu wah, dia pay sabun dia ni jauh macam leh gua leh, pay sabun tap jauh macam leh, mayu dia ane jinji dia ya cer cer tangan dia tu sih jauh macam leh. Jadi kau dia kan sah dia tak boleh kau jauh macam leh sih orang dah, dia ni sih orang.
So the meaning of what is written is as I explained, as opposed to how it sounds there, which is, it's not that they deny the process of procreation, but they say that this is the form, the body alone. So through the sperm fertilizing the egg, the mum gets pregnant and the child grows within her and is born from her. So there's not a question there, but that is not yet a person. The person doesn't get created in this way. The person, this is just about the form. So the person doesn't come from the father or is held by the mother. So that's where the point is. Because there we'll go on to have a view about the creator putting in a soul. Again, there's not a word for this, but the person comes from the creator. But the body is about conception.
It's just very confusing because I would deny that statement because it's false. So I don't get it.
So what Ken is saying is beyond the words, there is a further meaning, and that's what he brought through. Because for the words, it's like you say, but there is the further meaning behind it which explains that. Because like what he said about the person, it's not there at all, right? Mm. So that is the further meaning behind what is written
there. Pei sabun taba yo mare se ajina, an di mei sabun zimba yo mare se shigduwa.
Kason?
Kason?
Natsu di loktu, kani samgidu, pala ama dan namdu chikpa je, deni di kuwa dang di chok, che che dang, bugu kor. Ni di re, deni kare tene di lokta re. The process of conception is a dependent process which points to it being impermanent. Hence the body is created is impermanent, but the person is permanent. The person itself is unchanging. So this process of natural conception, yeah, of the parents sleeping together, this does not create a person. It creates a form, a body, but it doesn't create the person. The person is something separate that is permanent.
So can I just ask that is the vision that expressed by Lama Tsongkhapa that the form of the being that is not the person comes from the lineage of the father alone and no lineage of the mother? Is that the view of Lama Tsongkhapa?
Do you see that here?
Yeah, if the wrong view is denying there's no planting of the seed by the father and no holding of the seed by the mother, it's implying there is planting of the seed by the father and holding of the seed by the mother. And so for the physical form, it seems like, you know, the father's the gardener planting the tomato seed and it's his tomato seed, and the mother's just the soil, you know, allowing it to grow. It's if there's nothing to do with the body of the person from the mother. There's no genetic material.
Whilst what you say on the one hand is correct, in that culturally it is presented that the lineage of the child, the race of the child, comes from the father. So just to say it's separate, so from the Jewish tradition, this is the opposite, it comes from the mother. So these things exist culturally, but that's not what this is about. This is about the body of the body, the body of the being, being impermanent, but the person being permanent. And this is what the denial is about. Oh yeah, so some thought can be given to this over the next 2.5 hours, and we can continue this afternoon.